Welcome to 30 Minutes of VOA Learning English, the voice of America's information service for people learning English. Join us now for In the News and American Stories, coming up after As It Is.
Hello again, and welcome to As It Is. I'm Jonathan Evans in Washington. Today on the program, we have two stories related to the continent of Africa. The American Amputee Soccer Federation invited a team of amputees from Liberia to play in an international tournament. The tournament was to take place last month in Maryland. But before the team could leave Liberia, U.S. officials canceled the event. We will have more on that story later in the program. But first, each year, many Kenyans graduate from a college or university. Yet many graduates are unable to find a job in the country after finishing their studies. Now, some university graduates are turning to agriculture as a way to fight unemployment. They think that farming can be as satisfying as any other business or job. Marcia James has our report.
33-year-old Caleb Karuga is the owner and operator of Wendy Farms. He grows vegetables and keeps farm animals, including dairy cows and poultry. 3 years ago, he began training for an agricultural business, or agribusiness. He signed a lease to use land owned by other people. He now has 4 pieces of farmland. Caleb Karuga says many young people are going into agribusiness. He says the business does not require a lot of money to start.
Many a times people think that you need a lot of money to get into agribusiness. With $100, you're good to lease some land. Really, in Kenya, in a part of this country, 1 acre, you're good to go.
Increasing numbers of young people are turning to farming, and the industry is growing. Diana Kuya is studying diplomacy at the University of Nairobi. She has identified some land that is available for lease. She plans to launch an agribusiness once she is done with her studies.
Knowledge is important, but it's not everything, you know? You have to be wise. You would wait for that white-collar job so that you start getting your own money, so that you become independent and all that stuff. And an amazing thing about agriculture is that you can start it at whatever age.
Jacob Natu, an economist at Kenyatta University, agrees. He says this is one reason why the Kenyan government is adding billions of dollars into the sector. He says it wants to push agriculture from subsistence farming to business.
People are no longer seeing agriculture as a way for those who cannot make it, but instead it's becoming a sector which can attract each and every one of us. So it can solve the very big unemployment problem that we are currently facing.
Agricultural experts say there has been a change in thinking about farming. They say many Kenyans now understand that the agricultural sector can be satisfying if done right. They also say people new to farming, like Diana Kuya, will need advisors to guide them. I'm Marcia James.
You are listening to As It Is from VOA Learning English. The Liberia amputee soccer team is one of the top teams in the sport. They have won the African Nation Tournament for amputees 3 times. They are so good that the American Amputee Soccer Federation asked the Liberian team to play an international friendly soccer match. The event was scheduled for early August in Maryland, but then it was canceled. The team came to the U.S. anyway, and after a month, the players are stranded, either unable or unwilling to return home. Now it appears the 15 players are having a difficult time with basic daily needs. Bob Doty has our report.
Some of the players lost arms or legs because of violence in their country. Cooper Melvin Gota is president of the Liberia Amputee Soccer Association. He says the team knew before leaving for the United States that the international competition was canceled. But, he says, the players wanted to come to the U.S. to talk about the deplorable conditions in Liberia. Amputees lack decent housing, education, and food in Liberia. The team decided to make the U.S. trip to appeal for assistance. Some Liberians say the team was looking for a way out of Liberia. But Mr. Gota denies the players' plan to stay in the United States. He says the team would like to return home. But, he says, the Liberian government plans to take legal action against them. The government reportedly is seeking to recover money spent on the trip. Eugene Nagbe is Liberia's Minister of Youth and Sports. He told VOA there has been a lot of goodwill towards the amputees in Liberia. He denies claims by Mr. Gota that the government plans to prosecute the team for making the trip. A number of Liberian Americans have been helping the soccer team. One of them is Semende Lloyd and the Women's Wing Organization, a group in Washington, D.C. She and her group have found temporary housing for 11 of the players. They found a 6-bedroom house and set up a cable television connection so that the players could watch their favorite sport, soccer. She asked D.C. area hotels to donate mattresses for beds. She also asked local restaurants to donate their unsold food. Over the weekend, the players asked Mrs. Lloyd for pocket change money. They also wanted at least $50 for each of them to send to their families back in Liberia. The players said they have jobs and that their families need the money. Mrs. Lloyd told VOA she is worried about feeding the amputees or how to pay for the gas, water, electricity, and cable TV. In addition, she owes $2,700 for use of the house. A Liberian embassy official described the situation as a nightmare. He said a hotel in Baltimore had evicted the amputees. The official said the Liberian government agreed to provide about $300 per person for the embassy to rewrite the amputees' tickets to enable them to return to Liberia. I'm Bob Doty.
And that's our program for today. Join us again tomorrow for another As It Is. I'm Jonathan Evans. Thanks for listening.
In the News is next, followed by American Stories. You can read and listen to our programs and download MP3s at learningenglish.voanews.com. You can learn with us on Facebook, Twitter, and YouTube at VOA Learning English.
Thank you. From VOA Learning English, this is In the News. Most sides involved in Syria recognize the importance of defeating the terrorist forces of the Islamic State. But experts say an offensive against the militants is unlikely as long as the civil war continues. Last month, the United Nations Security Council expressed support for renewed peace efforts in Syria. It was the first time in 2 years that the Council's 15 members agreed on a political statement about the conflict. The plan calls for the creation of a new government in Syria. European nations are especially interested in ending the war. Tens of thousands of Syrian refugees have fled to Europe. Migrants and refugees from other countries also have joined that flow, and tensions are strained along various borders. Last weekend, Germany's foreign minister reportedly pushed for a new diplomatic initiative in talks with Russia's foreign minister. The German official said he is worried about the increasing amount of human suffering and needs of refugees who are seeking asylum in Germany and other countries. Retired Marine General John Allen is the U.S. representative to the coalition fighting the Islamic State. He said the refugee crisis cannot be ended unless the war in Syria ends. General Allen told the BBC that this instability has been created by Bashar al-Assad and that regime. He ultimately chose to make war on his own people. That ultimately created the crisis that we face today. He added that President Assad had to go. The general suggested the war will not end with military action. In his words, the conflict has got to be solved at a political level and a global level. But a political settlement has been elusive. It would require agreement among the Assad government, many different rebel groups, and the countries that support them. Iran has given Syria thousands of fighters, as well as billions of dollars worth of weapons, fuel, and loans. Last week, Iran said it does not agree that Mr. Assad should give up power. The rebel groups, however, agree that he should. Iranian Foreign Minister Javad Zarif said, "Those who set conditions about the Syrian president should be blamed for the continued war." A day after he spoke, Iran's President Hassan Rouhani said he is willing to talk with other countries, including Saudi Arabia, about ways to end the war in Syria. But he said there could be no debate about the future of President Assad until there is peace in Syria. The rebels believe peace will not come to Syria until Mr. Assad is no longer president. Others worry about who would replace Mr. Assad and if the country would be made stable. Russia is also a strong supporter of the president. Foreign Minister Sergei Lavrov has called the demand for Mr. Assad to be removed unrealistic and counterproductive. In the past few weeks, Russia has strengthened its support for the Syrian government. It has sent Russian military advisers to Syria and increased weapons to the Assad government. It is providing intelligence information and other aid. And that's In the News from VOA Learning English. I'm Christopher Jones-Cruz.
Now, the special English program, American Stories. Our story today is called Luck. It was written by Mark Twain. Here is Shep O'Neill with the story.
I was at a dinner in London, given in honor of one of the most celebrated English military men of his time. I do not want to tell you his real name and titles. I will just call him Lieutenant General Lord Arthur Scoresby. I cannot describe my excitement when I saw this great and famous man. There he sat, the man himself, in person, all covered with medals. I could not take my eyes off him. He seemed to show the true mark of greatness. His fame had no effect on him. The hundreds of eyes watching him, the worship of so many people, did not seem to make any difference to him. Next to me sat a clergyman, who was an old friend of mine. He was not always a clergyman. During the first half of his life, he was a teacher in the military school at Woolwich. There was a strange look in his eye as he leaned toward me and whispered, "Privately, he is a complete fool." He meant, of course, the hero of our dinner. This came as a shock to me. I looked hard at my friend. I could not have been more surprised if he had said the same thing about Napoleon, or Socrates, or Solomon. But I was sure of two things about the clergyman. He always spoke the truth, and his judgment of men was good. Therefore, I wanted to find out more about our hero as soon as I could. Some days later, I got a chance to talk with the clergyman, and he told me more. These are his exact words. "About 40 years ago, I was an instructor in the military academy at Woolwich when young Scoresby was given his first examination. I felt extremely sorry for him. Everybody answered the questions, well, intelligently, while he, why, dear me, he did not know anything, so to speak. He was a nice, pleasant young man. It was painful to see him stand there and give answers that were miracles of stupidity. I knew, of course, that when examined again, he would fail and be thrown out. So, I said to myself, it would be a simple, harmless act to help him as much as I could. I took him aside and found he knew a little about Julius Caesar's history, but he did not know anything else. So I went to work and tested him and worked him like a slave. I made him work over and over again on a few questions about Caesar, which I knew he would be asked. If you will believe me, he came through very well on the day of the examination. He got high praise, too, while others, who knew 1,000 times more than he, were sharply criticized. By some strange, lucky accident, he was asked no questions but those I made him study. Such an accident does not happen more than once in 100 years. Well, all through his studies, I stood by him with the feeling a mother has for a disabled child. And he always saved himself by some miracle. I thought that what in the end would destroy him would be the mathematics examination.
I decided to make his end as painless as possible. So I pushed facts into his stupid head for hours. Finally, I let him go to the examination to experience what I was sure would be his dismissal from school. Well, sir, try to imagine the result. I was shocked out of my mind. He took first prize, and he got the highest praise. I felt guilty day and night. What I was doing was not right, but I only wanted to make his dismissal a little less painful for him. I never dreamed it would lead to such strange, laughable results. I thought that, sooner or later, one thing was sure to happen. The first real test, once he was through school, would ruin him. Then the Crimean War broke out. I felt that sad for him that there had to be a war. Peace would have given this donkey a chance to escape from ever being found out as being so stupid. Nervously, I waited for the worst to happen. It did. He was appointed an officer, a captain of all things. Who could have dreamed that they would place such a responsibility on such weak shoulders as his? I said to myself that I was responsible to the country for this. I must go with him and protect the nation against him as far as I could. So I joined up with him, and away we went to the field. And there, oh dear, it was terrible. Mistakes, fearful mistakes. Why, he never did anything that was right. Nothing but mistakes. But you see, nobody knew the secret of how stupid he really was. Everybody misunderstood his actions. They saw his stupid mistakes as works of great intelligence. They did, honestly. His smallest mistakes made a man in his right mind cry and shout and scream, too, to himself, of course. And what kept me in a continual fear was the fact that every mistake he made increased his glory and fame. I kept saying to myself that when at last they find out about him, it will be like the sun falling out of the sky. He continued to climb up over the dead bodies of his superiors. Then, in the hottest moment of one battle, down went our colonel. My heart jumped into my mouth, for Scoresby was the next in line to take his place. Now we are in for it, I said. The battle grew hotter. The English and their allies were steadily retreating all over the field. Our regiment occupied a position that was extremely important. One mistake now would bring total disaster. And what did Scoresby do this time? He just mistook his left hand for his right hand, that was all. An order came for him to fall back and support our right. Instead, he moved forward and went over the hill to the left. We were over the hill before this insane movement could be discovered and stopped. And what did we find? A large and unsuspected Russian army waiting. And what happened? Were we all killed? That is exactly what would have happened in 99 cases out of 100. But no, those surprised Russians thought that no one regiment by itself would come around there at such a time. It must be the whole British army, they thought. They turned tail. Away they went over the hill and down into the field in wild disorder, and we after them. In no time there was the greatest turnaround you ever saw. The Allies turned defeat into a sweeping and shining victory. The Allied commander looked on, his head spinning with wonder, surprise, and joy. He sent right off for Scoresby and put his arms around him and hugged him on the field in front of all the armies. Scoresby became famous that day as a great military leader, honored throughout the world. That honor will never disappear while history books last. He is just as nice and pleasant as ever, but he still does not know enough to come in out of the rain. He is the stupidest man in the universe. Until now, nobody knew it but Scoresby and myself. He has been followed day by day, year by year, by a strange luck. He has been a shining soldier in all our wars for years. He has filled his whole military life with mistakes. Every one of them brought him another honorary title. Look at his chest, flooded with British and foreign medals. Well, sir, every one of them is the record of some great stupidity or other. They are proof that the best thing that can happen to a man is to be born lucky. I say again, as I did at the dinner, Scoresby's a complete fool.
You have just heard the story, Luck. It was written by Mark Twain and adapted for Special English by Harold Berman. Your narrator was Shep O'Neill. Listen again next week at this same time for another American story told in Special English on the Voice of America. This is Susan Clark.